Welcome everybody to this week's Football Fans Podcast. This is the pod, you know by now, that gives real fans real voices. No fence sitting on this podcast, no umming and ahhing, no dithering. Everyone on this podcast gives it to you with honesty, with pure knowledge and with passion. That's how we do it on the FFP.
I wouldn't want our new owner to jump at meeting that salary because that changes the fabric of your club, and you go down a Newcastle pathway or something like that. You know, where before you know it, you're paying Chola Amiobi 30 grand a week.
But he could make it, he owns Newcastle Football Club, so he could turn around to any of those managers and go, the priority this season is win me the FA Cup. I want to be the owner that brings the FA Cup back to Newcastle Football Club. And he clearly has not said that to a single manager.
They need to look at NFL, the American sports, and how they do things. NFL is probably the most brutal sport of all of them. And you don't have players out for that. Of course players get injuries, of course, but you look at how physical that sport is, but they still manage to play.
My name is Jordan. You can follow me on Twitter @JordanJBryan. Don't forget, you can follow also the FFP @FFP_11 and subscribe for free. We will not take any money from your account to join in on the fun. Just check us out, Football Fans Podcast, via the iTunes library and all that good jazz. So I'm going to introduce my panel for this week. I'm going to introduce, first of all, two of my three to start off with. We have Stephen, our Liverpool fan, and Akin returning, our Manchester United fan. How are we doing, gentlemen?
Not too bad, George.
Very good, very good.
Good.
I'm doing well.
I don't want no fighting from you guys as well, because I know that we've got you guys later in the week, so we're going to keep it nice
keep
and
dry.
We're going to save it for later on in the pod. We've also got, making his debut, trying to get you all season, finally got him on the pod. We have an Everton fan on the FFP. Good evening, Josh. How you doing, my friend?
I'm very good. I don't sound like it, but I am an Evertonian. I promise.
And it's good to have you here. I've been trying to get you for a while, so I'm glad we've got an Everton fan making a debut on the FFP. So we've actually got a double rivalry, because we've got you, Stephen, rivalry.
I think
with...
I've got a lot of ground to hold here, right?
We all hate each other.
We all hate Stephen.
We had a North London rivalry last week, and now we've got a North West and Merseyside rivalry going on. So
outnumbered.
Yeah, sorry, mate. That wasn't intentional.
But good weekend for me to be here then.
I suppose it is, because they both struggled. We'll get into that in a little bit, I'm sure. So let's kick off with some very quick drive-bys, gentlemen. I'm going to start with, who should we begin with? Stephen, I'm going to ask you, if Leicester do not win the league now with, I think, was it 10 games, 9 games
nine
to
games,
go,
five,
9 games to go,
clear.
Would that be deemed a failure at this point?
No, I don't. It can't be a failure for Leicester if they don't win the league.
Even now, with the gap they've got, the momentum they've got, the rivals are just trying not to win the league.
There's still some big teams behind them queuing up. They've still got 9 games. Still a long way to go in a league season. That's what, a quarter of the season still left to play.
Mm.
And they've got 3 big games to finish the season off. But I think Leicester will still do well to win the league from where they are.
You're also not
I'd love to see them do it, but yeah. I don't know. City might string a run together before the season's out.
And what to you would constitute a failure for them? Does it have to be top
They've
two
got to
now?
Finish the, they, no, I think if they finish in the top four, Leicester, if you gave that to Leicester before the beginning of the season, finishing
four. But now, at this stage now, if they don't finish...
Look, they'll be gutted if they don't win the league. If you're 5 clear with 9 points, with 9 games to play, you'll be gutted if you don't win the league. But I don't think it's a failure when you compare them to the teams that are kind of queuing up behind them.
Okay, all right. Akin, let's come to you now. Who was the most dumbest over the weekend? Coquelin, Mata, Delaney, Milner or Morales?
None of them.
None of them were stupid.
Reason being, I take issue with how we kind of slate footballers for how they behave on the pitch most of the time. So, of course, some of the times they cross the line, but when you cross the line, you're going to war. And your adrenaline is rushing, blood is pumping. You're not always going to make the most rational of decisions. Everything is split seconds. Now, most of the guys that you mentioned, they were only a split second late. I think in nearly all of the instances, the referee should have used their common sense. Either from most of them, Mata, well, the first booking was a booking. But I know Kevin Morales James Milner, I think they could, on their first bookings, they could have been spoken to. All they needed was a word, calm down. Matters were so early in the game. I know by the letter of the law, he blocked a free kick.
There you go then. Isn't that case closed?
No, it's
if it's
not
in the first minute, you have two yellows. You got to go.
There's always room for discretion. You've got to take into consideration the context in which these things are happening. And I don't think the referees are. Now, I don't know if that's through what direction they've been given. If it is, then fair enough. I think there's an issue with the rules. But I still think that more common... No, I'm not even going to say common sense. I think more discretion needs to be given to these young men who are crossing the line and going to war. Not every foul is a yellow card. Or is every foul a yellow card now?
Okay, so let's break it down then. Let's use a couple of examples. You mentioned Mata there. Mata's second booking, is that a yellow card?
For me, if that was me, I'm the referee, and this is biases aside, I would say to him, what are you doing? Sort it out. The next one, you're going to go because
that's
a
silly
foul.
Isn't that the whole point of the first booking? Surely is the warning.
No.
You're being generous, Zaki. I'm not even an Arsenal fan. I'd have sent Coughlin off twice for being so thick.
Not every foul is a booking.
No, I agree. But you know when the game's gone that way, you can't make that tackle. If you're Coughlin, Arsenal were cruising at that stage of that game.
Yeah,
it was
madness. I agree. It was so stupid.
He was going nowhere. James Milner, his second yellow card was for a foul on the edge of the Crystal Palace box. It's just brain dead. Like, I agree the referees are too card happy. But the player's got to get the sense of the game and what the referee's dishing out. And if the referee's dishing cards out for that, you can't fly in anymore.
That is true. But like I said, when you're playing, all that consideration, all that rationale sometimes doesn't come into it straight away. James Milner, for example, they weren't even 1-0 down, were they, at that time?
No, we were 1 down when he made that.
So
made
he's
that
desperate
tackle
to try and get his team back in the game.
No, but that's the difference.
That's one thing.
But that's why you're on 100 grand a week. That's you're on that month. You get paid.
You're not thinking
that money
about the money when you're playing.
No, but you're meant to be that next level of player. When you're playing for Liverpool, when you're playing for Arsenal, when
not
you're
Liverpool
playing for
anymore.
Man United.
The thing that makes it even worse though, the consistency isn't there. Coquelin should have got sent off, in my opinion. I agree. Dyer, I like Dyer. It's a clear yellow.
I don't think he was a foul.
The referee's bold.
I think Giroud fouled him first.
Really?
What? I think Giroud fouled him first.
We put his arm across, but
Giroud has his hand on his head. He's holding him down, and as a result, Dyer holds on to him.
Okay. Even if that's true, the referee's given the free kick to Arsenal, so he suggests that he's seen something wrong.
Yeah,
and
a poor
that
shirt
just
is a booking.
That's a real. I think that's a real worry for me because the referee is completely bottled.
Yeah,
decision.
But I agree with. Like, I mean, I agree with Akin what you're saying. That there are far too many yellow cards given out in the game these days. Mm-hmm. There is no leeway anymore. Every foul tends to be a yellow card. But when you're playing those rules and the players are aware that that's what's happening, you cannot carry on making them challenges.
Agreed. Okay. All right, Josh, is Yannick Bolasie the most improved player this season in the Premier League?
God, he's up there. Record with and without speaks for itself. Palace are basically on the slide without him. He schools pretty much anyone he comes in front of, probably bar Seamus Coleman with his techers.
Can I ask, George, do you think it? You've asked that question.
Okay, so yeah.
Do you think that's because he is the most improved? Have you asked that because you think he is?
Kind of. I think
over Riyad Mahrez or Jamie Vardy?
I think the room of improvement from where he was 12 months ago to where he is now is a bigger gap, is a bigger step up.
How many goals did Jamie Vardy score last season in the league? Four?
Something yeah, but
like
I think
that.
I think
this season, like the people like are saying, that, he's got to lead the line for England at the Euros.
But I'm asking on Bolasie because I think that he was known as a bit of a headless chicken,
a one-trick pony,
no end product, nothing. This season, his goals is not that much more than it was last year, but his delivery is a lot more. He seems to be aware of when to not make the third trick and just twos enough and then give it off.
It's a classic case of a winger who's suddenly found out how to be productive, actually have an end product to what they do. So I think he's in with a shout, but I think if you put it to a poll, you'd struggle to for people to look past Vardy, less so Mahrez, because I think he showed quality last season.
I think Bolasie was good last year. Bolasie started showing form
towards the end.
Christmas last year. He did some things that,
Fairness, every time he plays against us, he looks like Messi.
And, he likes playing against Liverpool.
He loves Liverpool.
He does like playing
against
Liverpool.
He is against Liverpool, most improved.
He does. But his improvements come from last season, in my opinion.
In fairness, I'd fancy my chances against Moreno as well.
we all would.
All right, guys, nice one. I've got a question I want to put to the three of you. Two things, actually. The first one is, if Leicester do not win the league this year, who would be leading the race for Player of the Year out of Payet and Mahrez?
Oh, it's got to be Mahrez.
If Leicester don't win the league?
Even if they don't. You asked Stephen a question in the drive-bys about Leicester's season. Mm. No matter what happens from now, if they lose their last 9 games, it's been a massive success, even from where they are.
I agree.
And the reason I say that is because you're saying from now, and I do get the question, but you have to take into consideration where they were 12 months ago, where they were aiming to finish at the beginning of the season, where they were aiming to finish at Christmas. All Ranieri was saying was get to 40 points, and they've got to, 60 now, I think. So no matter what happens, whether they finish 6th, 7th, it's a massive successful season, and their players deserve to be in the team of the year. Not all of them, of course, but a few of them. Yeah. And Mahrez, definitely player of the year for me. The reason why I'll give it to him over Payet is because Payet got injured. And, well, two reasons. Payet got injured and Leicester are higher up the table. If they finish lower than West Ham, I'll still give it to Mahrez because Payet got injured. He missed a chunk of games. Mm. Mahrez affected all of those games. Mm. So he's affected more games. Other than that, it would have been a dead heat. Mm. But yeah, Mahrez for that reason.
Okay.
But Payet, I give him a lot of credit.
Yeah.
He came in after his injury and got straight back to business.
Hit the ground running again.
He didn't even need another three, four games.
He bossed the first game
he
back.
He got straight back to business. Yeah. And for me, he looks like he's carrying a bit of weight, but he doesn't play like it. He just got back to business and started bossing the games. He's a serious player.
And I think it's worth pointing out both players have come from pretty much obscurity, perhaps less so Payet, but it says something about the modern game that the two people you would put against each other for player of the season most likely,
most of them didn't know 12 months ago.
Exactly. I think
for you it's of the two, even if Leicester don't win the league.
I'd agree with that. I think the same. I think if there's a dramatic turnaround of events, then Payet may be in with a chance. But Mahrez has changed the most games, been the most consistent, not played every game. He's not been out at all. And I think he'll probably carry on. Touch wood, I'd like to see them win the league. Certainly so. Yeah, yeah. I'd go Mahrez to answer the question.
Stephen, of the two?
Yeah, I'd say Mahrez as well. For me, the stats is 15 goals, 11
ridiculous,
assists or something.
Yeah.
It's crazy stats for a winger.
He's got more goals than a lot of strikers.
Yeah, definitely got more goals than Arnold.
Combined, possibly.
And he has a habit of turning. I think Payet's lucky. West Ham are not a bad side, actually, individually. Mm. And it's hard to say because they're below Leicester, obviously, but I feel like Mahrez has had to turn more games when Leicester have needed him. Sunday being a prime example, or Saturday being a prime example. That was a bit of magic. That game was kind of going nowhere. Not many players can pull
something from nothing.
Payet's done that a couple of times for West Ham as well, but consistently throughout the season, Mahrez has produced a little bit of magic whenever Leicester have needed it.
Yeah. All right. I started last week, everyone every week between now and the season for their three to go down and the winners. Start with the winners. Who do you think will win the league? Not who do you want to win the league. Who do you think will win the league this season, Stephen?
I think City might.
You going with City?
I think City might sneak it, yeah.
City, Akin?
Gosh, this is the bane of my existence at the moment. Who's going to win the league? That Dutch guy at United is hurting my heart. But in any case, I want Leicester to, but I just don't see it. I see them finishing third or fourth.
Wow.
I hope I'm wrong, but hey. I think probably before Saturday, I would have said Spurs.
Mm. Yeah, but that changed a lot.
But how they walked off the pitch, not even the result, how they walked off the pitch, they seemed content with the draw. Okay. And that's 2 points dropped.
That's funny you said that. Sorry just to cut you there, Ken. Someone else said to me, I didn't notice it, but someone else said to me a similar thing about the Arsenal players. They said that when the Arsenal players came off the pitch, they looked angry. So, I don't think Arsenal are in it, but the idea being that Arsenal looked like that was 2 points. We could have won that game. We should have won that game. It's just saying Tottenham looked like
they were content. I saw, I think, Danny Rose and
they were someone, laughing after the game,
just talking and chatting, like, you know, like
they weren't angry.
They weren't. They were 2-1 up against 10 men. They were 2-1 up in a title match, in a big clash, irrespective of a derby, irrespective of at home, irrespective of the 10 men, and they drew. To me, they lost the game. Because I'm a Man United fan, I'm used to these big games, you know, and expecting the 3 points. If anything other than that is a loss. And they came off the pitch satisfied that they got a result against Arsenal. Mm. And if you're thinking like champions, which they were to me up until then, you'll be very upset with that result. Mm. But they seem to have been happy with it and so on. So as a result of that, I just think City have a knack for coming back in title races. And this season is terrible. You can put 6 games together.
Yeah, if they win six or seven games,
and they can win the league.
But this is my big thing. Apart from probably Leicester, this is the reason why I've ruled out Arsenal for the title and United for top four. It's because most teams can't put together four wins in a row.
Not even
City don't have a bad run of games either. Their running isn't.
Interestingly, isn't though, they've not beaten a team in, I think, the top eight.
Mm.
This season.
Mm. No, true, but when...
I do think they'll turn it around.
When they want to turn up, City... If they can... Look, that's based completely on them sticking 7 or 8 games together. I think if they get 7 or 8 game run, they will win the league, because no one else...
Can do that.
We'll be able to live with that. And I think Spurs, like Akin was saying, I thought they looked tired on Saturday as well.
Mm.
The first time, I think, they faded with 15, 20 minutes to go instead of taking the game to Arsenal.
To another level. Josh, who's your team to?
With Leicester, as I said, I'd love to win it. If I had money on them now, I'd cash out. I agree.
I think the Leicester fan did cash out.
He did. Before the Watford game, it went down at 20 grand or something, I heard. But yeah, I'd cash out. I think there's a lot of games to be played. And they, you know, as great as they've been, as some of the stars that they do have, they're still Leicester, and it will get tough. I'd love them to do it, but I just think it's too much of a dream.
Give me a name.
If I was putting money on it, I'd probably go Spurs, because I think they I agree with what I can say, and actually they showed a hint of sort of classic Spurs there by, you know, looking okay with what was 2 points lost. So certainly Rose did in what was seen on camera. But they're a different team to what they were. Mm. They look like they are the most drilled. They certainly did in the first half. And I think Pochettino's changed their identity, which is hugely significant. Yes, City could do it, and I wouldn't be surprised if they won it, but they're not a great team. They aren't a great team.
They're not.
I think what will be really interesting, I may eat my words on the Leicester thing. I mean, Spurs are playing Dortmund, who are going to run them ragged.
But that's what we were talking about this at the weekend, that apparently that I'd never heard of it before. There's a thing called the Poch slump, or he's renowned for teams running out of gas
near the end of the season.
Near the end of the season, and for the first time, was it after Fiorentina game? Or where he was
last week?
Was it last week? I can't remember what game. Well, Pochettino actually came out and said, "We're tired. We're playing too many games."
Yeah, that's right.
And it was the first time all season where he started saying, "Oh, the players, we're playing a lot. We're run down a little bit," and then they looked tired.
It was the first sign of a little bit of an excuse.
The first time he was brought up, it's here. There'd never been an excuse all season before. They were just playing their games. He had them drilled. They were the fittest team in the league. And for the first time, I thought they looked tired.
Mm.
Yeah.
Against Arsenal. And now, look, that might be completely like kind of a...
Just a bad week.
A misdirection, a bad week or whatever, because they are well drilled.
Yeah.
They have looked probably the best side team in the league for the last three,
they just couldn't have a worse draw in the Europa League, because Dortmund run.
It depends what way they take it. I mean,
I think he'll go for it.
Yeah, he probably will.
He's got to sacrifice it. He's got to. It's a trophy. It's a European trophy.
It's
he's
a massive
got
game.
To go for it.
His problem is it's a massive game. I reckon if they got a different draw, he'd play a different side. But Dortmund is one of the big European ties. You can't turn.
But from what I understand, he trains his players really hard.
Twice a day,
apparently.
I don't know if he's still doing that. I hope not at this stage of the season. But at this stage of the season, it's more about just recovery.
Mm.
Not even training, recovery.
Preparing for the next game.
Bloody DVDs of the next match. And that's it.
Yeah.
So I hope he's taken the training down and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I
hope he ain't. I'm living to the ground.
I've got to move on because lots want to get through on the pod today. Very quickly, three teams to go down. Villa are gone, so two to go with Villa.
I'd go. So what do we got? I think Norwich, unavoidably, they just don't seem to suit the Premier League. They lack quality. I think we may talk about it later. Who else have I got in the mix? So I think Sunderland and Newcastle.
Give me a name.
I'd probably put Newcastle to go based on the fact that Allardyce just knows what he's doing. That's so palpable. He just knows what he's doing.
Okay, we're going to get into Newcastle in a minute. Three names or two names with Villa?
Norwich, and I want Newcastle to go down because I don't like their fans, but
we don't have any Newcastle or Villa fans. It's like you've written them off.
I like Steve McLaren. As it goes.
Really?
Like Steve McLaren, so it'll be a shame to see him relegated, but I think Newcastle will go down.
And Norwich. And Norwich, sorry, okay. Two names.
Full house.
Norwich and Newcastle.
Norwich and Newcastle as well.
I tip Norwich, the third team to go
down. That's huge though, isn't it? If we're all tipping Newcastle to go down. I mean, spent millions and millions of pounds again. You know, that is just...
Well, you've given me a perfect segue into our first talking point of the podcast, Josh. Thank you.
You can come again.
I want to talk about Newcastle. But I want to talk about Mike Ashley, and I want to ask the question. I'll start with you, Stephen, on this one. Why do you think Mike Ashley wants to keep this football club? Because the reason I've been hearing for the last couple of years is that it makes money. He's a businessman. Being in the Premier League makes them money, blah, blah, blah. If they go down, then they don't make as much money. He's invested a lot of money, true to his word, at the end of last season, during the summer and even in January again. So he's spending money now. So arguably he's possibly losing money. He's getting a lot of flack from... as he always has done. Why does he want to keep that club? Why didn't he just let it go and say, you know what, I've been here, was it 6, 7, 8 years?
You said it five times in your question.
Go on.
It's all the money.
But I've also said that he might be losing money now.
I don't think he's losing money. And I think even if Newcastle go down, I'd imagine his hope is that they would be big enough and strong enough that they'd come straight back up and they're straight back into the £1 billion TV deals. That's the reason why he's got Newcastle.
There's easier ways to make money though for rich people.
I think also with less stress. I think he's a very, very stubborn man to go along with it. So
vain?
Partly
vain.
The more the new possibly, and I think the more the Newcastle fans scream and stamp their feet for him to go, the more he thinks I'll stick around here. I'm making a few pounds, and you're not going to kick me out of something that I own. I don't know. The only way that he's ever going to move on is if the fans start talking with their feet. You don't turn up and give him 55,000 fans there every week. I'd imagine he'll move on pretty quickly. I mean, he had his eye on Rangers because he's seen them as another cash cow.
A big club that he can buy for cheap,
and he'll get money, and there'll be a cash cow in 10, 15 years' time when he could have got them back to where former glories, whatever it might be. He's a clever businessman, so he sees money there. That's the reason I'd say he wants to hold up. Pure as simple as that.
Akin, have you got any theories as to why you think that he puts up with all this stick? Is it just the fact that he likes to make money and the stick and the stress?
He did want to sell it. He did put it up for sale a few years ago. Nobody came to buy it. But then I think there's been two Premier League or Sky deals, TV deals since then. Each one better than the last.
Actually, I might just hang around
here. And on top of that, the Newcastle fans, they are ridiculous. No offence, but
people always say I don't mean to be rude, but I'm now going to be rude.
But they're ridiculous because he's made that club self-sustainable. Before him, they weren't. From what I understand, they were going into debt, etc., etc. They're turning a profit now. He, at the end of last season, has invested money in the side. It hasn't worked out well, but he invested money in the first team squad. On top of that, he's given his managers time. He hasn't been trigger happy. The only time he was trigger happy was when he initially had Sam Allardyce, who would have guaranteed them safety.
The irony.
And they were like ninth or something. The wonderfully intelligent Newcastle fans got angry because there's a specific way of successful football that Newcastle play, even though they've not won a trophy since the 70s and a league title since the 50s. And they drove him out. He bowed to the pressure then. Mike Ashley bowed to the pressure of the fans then. And that's since then, I don't think he has, because he's learned his lesson. Because at the end of that season, Newcastle got relegated. They hired the fans' favourite, Alan Shearer. He took them down. Alan Shearer's still a hero. And Mike Ashley's still a villain. Mike Ashley has got them back up, or under his leadership, they've gone back up. They're self-sustainable. They're turning a profit. And even if they go down this season, like what Steven said, hopefully he'll retain enough of the players.
Only 30% of teams go straight back up.
But yeah, but they are one of those teams.
But a question,
the last time they did, they go straight back up.
You're saying your points about him being a decent owner all seem to be about money. So he's made them, he made them sustainable. He's made profit. Football fans in the long term don't really care about that. It's just like Arsenal.
What do they care about?
They're like winning stuff.
So what have Newcastle ever won?
Competing.
No, or competing. But what?
When
what,
have they competed? No, but, I mean, 20 years ago.
No, but they were always a decent. Okay, that was in the league. I don't think Newcastle fans, and I'm not speaking for Newcastle fans, but I'm not sure they want to win the Premier League. I don't think they.
They want a cup
but,
run. I get
you know,
that.
Like he's clearly.
I'll take a cup run.
The cups are taken. Out, yeah, the cups are taken out of the agenda for Mike Ashley. Mm. They're almost like an annoyance to him because it can't be a
but
coincidence.
Is that him?
But it can't be a coincidence that every Newcastle manager that's come
it
in, Newcastle
be.
Just bomb out in the third round.
It can
round
be, because
every
a lot
season.
Of managers across the whole leagues, and I say leagues, are playing their second string
yeah, but
squad
he should make it a
in
a,
the cups.
But he could make it, he owns Newcastle Football Club, so he could turn around to any of those managers and go, the priority this season is win me the FA Cup.
But then,
I want to be the owner that brings the FA Cup back to
that's
Newcastle
true.
Football Club.
He could.
And he clearly has not said that to
he
a
could,
single manager.
But then again, I'll bring back all the other managers across the leagues, yeah, who are playing their second string squads. Why aren't their chairmen getting as much flack as he is for not prioritising
no,
cups?
But then that's up to their, that's up to those clubs. The Newcastle fans are standing their ground. And then it's not just that.
The point I'm making is that he's not doing anything different to what all the other chairmen are
no,
doing across
the
country.
He has taken the mick out of the club. I don't know. Dennis Wise in, Joe Kinnear in. I mean, that is taking the piss out of a big, massive UK.
Go on, Josh.
Well, I'm not an expert on how the club are run, but I gather, you know, you just need to actually watch Match of the Day to hear Alan Shearer say something interesting for a change. It's not a well-run club from top to bottom. They don't buy great. They don't
define
buy great players.
Define not a well-run club.
Not a well-run club.
Akin's point is that there's unlike a lot of clubs, they're financially stable. They currently turn a profit.
Do you mean fair point in terms of they don't win trophies? We've all tipped them to get relegated. So I guess as a performing football club, you know, yeah, money aside for a second, you know, they've never had a squad.
Is that Mike Ashley or is that the manager?
But he puts them in charge.
Okay.
So like he's put Graham Carr in charge of like what? My point is just one point. What do Newcastle Football Club stand for? So. Yes, they're not going to win the Premier League in modern money. They could become a Bilbao or a Sociedad from Spain where you go, do you know what? We're going to focus on our own area, youth development. We'll play 11 Geordie-born footballers here. The crowd would massively get behind that up there. I don't think they're looking to win the Premier League. It's just they don't like seeing...
Yeah.
11 foreigners playing for them that really don't care about the
show. I think that's a great idea. That's a great strategy. They just don't have the
have
people
a point
who can
to
yeah.
the, have a point to
yeah.
a football
they don't have people who can execute that.
Last
point on this.
Sorry, yeah. Even when he did appoint, you said something about the manager. He did appoint a manager who was quite successful, Alan Pardew,
yeah.
and was doing well with what he had. He was driven out. Alan Pardew was driven out by the wonderfully intelligent Geordies. Yeah, so to me, they seem very ungrateful for what they have. Now, that club has massive potential. They're a one-club city as well. So even the last point you made is a fantastic point. It could be a mission statement or an ethos of the club going forward. However, I think Mike Ashley is given a lot of flack unduly. I think it's unfair. And I think any manager going there under his tenure, unfortunately, is going to suffer because there's a toxic environment at the moment around Newcastle.
Well, I want to come on to that. I'll start with you, Stephen. Are the fans at Newcastle, because we hear about the legendary Newcastle United fans, as I can say, it's a one club city. I've not been there. He's wearing the right colours as well on the podcast as well, the Newcastle colours. It's a stadium that's bang in the centre of town, so I'm told.
Yeah,
so everything in that city is Newcastle Football Club. are the fans in some sense a blessing and a curse? Do you get what I mean?
They
support their club, they're into their club, they'll back you, but that comes with the pressure that no other players, managers have quite been able, bar Keegan, to kind of, and Robson, to be fair, to really deal with and handle.
Yeah, but you kind of need to bottle that up and use it. I mean, Newcastle should be a ground that no club wants to go and play at. It's 55,000-60,000. That should be a fortress. They should be 15-16 wins a season at Newcastle. I just think it's a club, it is a kind of a problem for them at the moment, because this, as Akin says, there is a toxic atmosphere around the place because they don't like Ashley. They're not seeing good football on the pitch. They've literally got nothing to be joyous about in their football club. They don't win football matches and they can't stand their own hierarchy.
The fans don't even have any players to respect and look up to. There's no leaders on the pitch.
If you had a star player, you could say, do you know what?
Why now? They probably booed him to bad form.
No, but he's a good player, but again, he's not a David Ginola. He's not one of those players.
I think he could have been.
It's his first season, though, isn't it? Like, where's the players who know the league, know the club?
Stephen Taylor.
They either know the club or they're completely devoid of quality. And who does McLaren sign? When McLaren gets the chance to sign his own players, he buys Townsend and Shelby, the two young players who have shown, you know, the biggest attitude problems of the last few years. Yeah, you know, they are classic Newcastle signings.
We'll talk about McLaren now, because I listened to his post-match interview after the game on Saturday, and you can always kind of tell when a manager's either on the verge of being sacked or resigning, because they start to kind of go from, you know, we'll keep on fighting, we'll go again. It's really, even if they're going down, they at least put up an image of defiance, that we're going to fight, we're going to carry on. He started using some words that I started to think, he knows he's going to resign. He started talking about, you know, if we go down, or if we play that again, we're going to go down.
Yeah, that struck me as well.
That makes me think, so even you starting to believe now that...
His body language, he was crossing his arms, yeah, and it looked awful.
His problem is that
do you think he still believes, or do you think that...
No, but I think he's probably looked at that team, and it's a mishmash of a squad. So it's made up of, really, it's Graham Carr's monster child.
There's a few of his players in there, to be fair. he's brought in quite a few players since he's been there.
Yeah, but a lot of them. I don't think he has any complete say over
Townsend and Shelby.
Yeah,
Mitrovic was his signing.
Yeah, no, but what I mean is, I think he probably puts his point in, but eventually they're being signed from on high, so that gets signed off by someone else, and then so yeah, he's probably got three or four players that he was quite keen on, but he's working with a squad of 25 players that's been made up over a bit of Alan. Pardew, a bit of Graham Carr, a bit of this, a bit of that, and it's a bit kind of, it's just disjointed. There's not, so when he's probably looking around that training ground looking for characters, who's going to dig us out of this hole, there's nothing there. There's no one going to dig Newcastle out of that hole.
Josh, do you think that we've all tipped them to go down, do you think that they have to get rid of him and replace him now to stay up, or are they going down regardless, do you think?
I don't think they're going down regardless. You know, they've got a big game. They've got the Sunderland game, haven't they?
Yeah, it's appalling record in that game.
Yeah, I know, appalling record. But that aside, you know, I think it'll be close. Why sack McLaren, who is a good coach, and he can certainly... I'm from Derby, and he really messed up there in a big way in the Championship. But I think he could probably take them out of the Championship in potentially the first season quite comfortably. And
but bearing in mind, sorry to cut you again, the big TV deal, you have to stay in the Premier League this season. Do you think they've got a better chance of staying up? Like they say,
have to stay in the league. You can get relegated and come back. The deal's for 3 years.
But it doesn't apply to the teams that start next season.
But they'll also get parachute money.
It's nothing compared to the
yeah.
But even if he can't, they can get promoted in year two of the TV deal and still get 100 and whatever million it is in the second year. But if they stay up third year, so.
But I think your question implies again, Jordan, I'm throwing it back on you.
No, throw it back.
You seem to suggest that they should get rid of him because that's their way of. They've got
on
a
this one,
chance.
I actually don't. I'm just genuinely asking if they want to stay, have they got a better chance of taking a risk and trying to get in, even a caretaker?
The two names linked are David Moyes and Pearson. Benitez.
Yeah.
And neither of them play the football. But are those Geordie intelligent guys
are
like.
Are going to step into that job now? Like, if you're 9 games left Moyes-wood. And you're. Really, the bottom four have been cut.
Moyes would take it. Yeah.
Moyes would take it.
I don't know if Moyes would.
I don't think he would. I think
Moyes would take it.
If Moyes holds on, he's going to get another Premier League job next season.
Who would take him?
Everton.
Swansea. That guy ain't going to be there next year, I don't think.
I rate him. I think he will.
I think he's doing all right now.
He's an example of a guy who's got a track record of saving clubs in trouble. He's gone to Swansea and he's had characters in the dressing room who he has been able to work with. Ashley Williams.
There you go.
Like
that's why
that.
I think he's been brought in to save them, I think. They'll start again next year. Like, right, you
but
saved
like,
us.
But Moyes could take over a West Brom. Pulis is talking about not signing a new deal. Then there's plenty of clubs that Moyes could wait for. He's never going to get a top.
I think you take West Brom over Newcastle?
What I'm saying is,
Championship.
I would take Newcastle.
But now, in the when they potentially going to go down,
I probably would as well. I'm not sure Moyes would take them to the Championship, but it's a big club who has. They have money to spend. I think Moyes has an air of arrogance to him. That's another debate. I don't think he'd take West Brom.
But what
at
I mean
all.
Is, Moyes. If Moyes takes the Newcastle job, and this is just a kind of a maybe because he's probably not even in the job. If he goes down to the Championship and takes that job, and it goes wrong, that is David Moyes' managerial career over. There's no. He's failed at United.
His next job's got to be the one.
He's got to pick his next job and make sure that it's success. And even if that's West Brom moving from West Brom from 15 to 10, that's a success of sorts. Going to Newcastle, taking them down.
If you don't
after
bring them back up,
and then doesn't get back up, it's a rocky road for David Moyes after that. So I'm not sure what options Newcastle have got.
Just finally, on McLaren. I mean, we mentioned that he's brought in a few players. Do we feel that he's just failed, Josh, and that he's just not good enough, or the problems there as to why they're going to be probably going down bigger than McLaren?
Certainly problems bigger than McLaren. I think the jury's still out on McLaren. Probably is he a great coach and an average manager? I don't think Newcastle are a fair judge of that, to be honest. They are so devoid of leaders, characters. They've got a bit of quality, which I think is why people talk them up occasionally as just being an okay Premier League team. But they've been so average for ages, even under Pardew's tenure, where you know he did okay with them. He also had games where they were completely embarrassing. Yeah,
it was extremes, wasn't it?
Extremes.
It was six in a row, then six in a row, and then it was six in a row.
If it was a house, you'd gut it and start again. Yeah. I just think they've got real squad issues.
But that requires patience from everybody involved, including the fans.
And intelligent fans, you don't think they're smart enough to give them that?
Yeah, I don't think they are.
McLaren, that wasn't the right setup for him. The only job he's really succeeded in was Twente. The structure at Twente effectively made
him
a coach rather than having to worry about transfers and all that kind of stuff. The structure's not just doesn't suit him in this country, I don't think. That's
all right. Let me move on to Norwich now, another team in trouble. We've not discussed Norwich on the pod all season. So I'll start with you, Josh, on this one. On Norwich, they're probably going to be going down. I've got a sneaky feeling. I don't know why. Despite tipping them to go down, they might just somehow stay up. I don't know why, but I just don't think that. I think there's a little bit of fight there. But are Norwich just a very, very good Championship team?
Yeah, I think...
They're a top three Championship team, bottom three Premier League team.
Yeah, they haven't made that transition. They don't look like they're comfortable in Premier League skin. They lack quality. I think everyone would probably agree with that here. And they don't score enough goals from that. You've got classic players like Cameron Jerome who will just go from being quite prolific in the Championship to just not scoring.
But I've got a list here of Jerome, Naismith, Rudd, Bessong, Redmond, Tete, Houlihan, Brady. Good players.
There's a couple of decent players.
They're not
there,
are they Premier League players?
I think Redmond and Naismith.
Nathan Redmond is a good player.
And Naismith proved himself.
I'd speak up Naismith.
I think Robbie
too.
Brady's a decent player.
Are they Premier League players?
I think if you put them into a couple of other, really? They're mid-level Premier League players. And I mean, they'd probably fit into a West Brom, a Swansea, that kind of that level. They're between 9 and 14.
One thing I will say, though, they've suffered from the mistakes they've made. Like, defenders, I think it happened on the weekend again, there was pretty much a mistake between them and Swansea ended up with the 3 points. And that's the cruel realities of the Premier League. But they've certainly been probably unlucky on just how many mistakes have ended up being goals against them. Defensively, they're poor. And I would say, you mentioned McLaren's body language at the weekend. The Norwich manager, that's right. He looks knackered and dejected, yeah. And like he does not know what to do. Like, and it's sorry to see.
Akin, summarise Norwich season. I've watched them quite a bit this season. They've not been, I don't think they've been battered at any point this season. They've not done anything drastically wrong. Just as Josh says, there's some just consistent poor defensive displays. Now, there's no stardust up front that can get you a goal and get you out of trouble. Are they just a very, very good Championship team? But in the Prem, they'll always just be in that bottom five.
For this season, yes. But I think they've got a good set. I think there's a good club in terms of his well-run. Alex Neil, I'm glad that no one's really talking about his job.
Or him. I like him. I actually like him.
He's a good young manager. So the likelihood is, what I think should and probably hopefully would happen, is that they'll get relegated and then keep him. I think they'll retain most of their players. They haven't spent well ridiculously, so they shouldn't be in any financial trouble. So I think they've done things correctly. They've given themselves a chance to stay up. They're not Aston Villa. You know, so
just staying in touch.
Yeah, and also I think there aren't many egos there from what it appears anyway. So it seems like, I do hear what you're saying in terms of there might be an element of team spirit, a bit of fight that can give them a chance to stay up. If they do go down, keep most of their players, regroup, come up again, whether it's straight away or takes an extra season, and go again. That way you have a decent financial footing. You can sign, you can take a bit more risks because you've had this year's money, you'll have the parachute payments. You know, I think they've done what was expected of them, to be fair. And they've got the Old Trafford win to take with them as well.
That's really burning you, isn't it? So, Stephen, it's looking like it'll probably be them or Sunderland to join Newcastle and Villa down. Is the difference is the difference
between Newcastle
clubs
off as well now, George?
You guys convinced me. I didn't before, but you guys have convinced me. But it's a difference between Sunderland and Norwich, that Sunderland have got a goal scorer and they've got a manager that doesn't get you relegated. Blah, blah, blah. Whereas Norwich have got a young, bright, up and coming manager, and they've got Cameron Jerome.
Yeah, that was the simple problem Norwich have had all season. They don't score goals and they concede too many. So that's just the losing formula right there, unfortunately. They make too many individual errors. I mean, when you watch them, as you're saying, like, they are well coached, they're well drilled when you watch Norwich. But there's always a rick, a goalkeeper will let a soft one in, Bassong will jump out and miss something, Jerome will miss a one, or you know, they just key crucial moments.
He didn't against United, by the way. He scored his goal against Old Trafford.
Oh, really?
He scored
that. Everyone's
one.
Notched at Old Trafford.
Far from us.
You didn't.
For us.
You didn't.
I just think in the crucial moments in Premier League football, they don't quite have that little bit of class that either saves a goal that they should have saved, that shouldn't go in, or gets a goal against the run of play that wins them a game that they probably would have lost otherwise.
Let's move on now. I want to talk about Everton because we have an Everton supporter on the pod this week. Yeah, we do. And I've got quite a bit I want to talk about with your club, Josh. So I've got two questions. I'll split them in two. The first question, tell us a little bit about the takeover deal. And I want to ask you, do you feel that Everton are going to be the next new superpower in the Premier League?
Probably not, would be my answer. I don't think he's got that much money. You know, you need a lot of money to have that kind of impact that Sayan Abramovich did. We've got a massive issue with the stadium and where we go, what we do with that, which is a huge amount of investment. I think what it does, Kirby, fantastic, awesome. Kirby's not an ideal place. Yeah. From the first club in Liverpool, I should add.
I think I'm
going to sort of segue to what I presume you're going to talk about next, which is Martinez. And ultimately, I think what the new owner will do is crank up the pressure on Martinez. However quickly a new stadium comes, money will be spent. I hope we may lose your Barclays and so on, but we'll spend money, probably more than we ever have. And it will crank up the pressure on Martinez, and it will slowly start to...
Would that not be what you want out of the new owner, though, is to keep your Barclays?
My next question was going to be, everyone's talking about who you're going to buy.
Stones,
isn't it more important who you keep rather than who you buy?
100%.
There's a good nucleus of a team there. Just keep that 11 and add a couple to
it. I agree, but I'm a realist. And so if Man City come knocking on Barclays' door and offer him however many tens of thousands of pounds a week, which... Someone probably will. I wouldn't want our new owner to jump at meeting that salary because that changes the fabric of your club, and you go down a Newcastle pathway or something like that. You know, where before you know it, you're paying Chola Amiobi 30 grand a week, which we were talking about earlier. You know,
you put comparing Barclays to Chola Amiobi.
I think it's a slippery slope for football clubs, and what Ken Wright has done. You know, again, he devised people. He has, without a doubt, brought a stability to the club with the good fabric of Everton on show. You know, it's a well-run club, and I wouldn't want to lose any of that sort of spirit. And I think it sounds like, touch wood, the new owner understands that and knows what the club's about. But I certainly don't want too much change.
Okay.
So we'll see.
Just a bit of context on this owner. Missouri, I've just got down here that he's now bought a 49.9% share in the club.
Yeah.
The option to buy the majority share. He left our lot. He sold his 50%
Arsenal. He's a Man United fan who bought shares in Arsenal after falling and missing out on buying shares in Liverpool.
So basically, he wasn't in somewhere.
He just wasn't in anywhere.
Anywhere.
British Iranian billionaire retained shares in Russian.
And that's okay. You know, I'm not expecting this guy to be...
season ticket holder.
You know, he's blood bleed blue or anything. I'm not expecting that.
It's business.
Ken Wright said he was going to bleed blue. He believed in all the Everton ways, as Ken Wright said.
Ken Wright does, and Ken Wright, I think, staying on as long as he's able to, as a consultant, as a sort of chairman figure, I think is brilliant, because you know it pays to have someone, it pays him more than money to have someone who understands the club and has the club's best interests at heart. And that's why we have a great squad. That's why youngsters sign for Everton, because they come to the club and they feel what it's about. It's a feeling. It's not just this, you know, Premier League status or whatever. That's what Moyes understood. That's what Martinez understands, and I hope it continues.
So, just brief as we wrap up on the takeover guy. Just, is there a feeling from the fans that this is only a good thing, or is there any skepticism about what could happen? Are you quite excited about next season now? And this is all good.
I think, is there a downside? Yeah, I think obviously. Without living in Merseyside, you can't quite get the true sense of where the debate lies. But I imagine it's going to be very divided, as ever, you know, just how it was with Ken Wright, just how it is with Martinez. You get some people who are pro, some people who are against. So I think there'll be lots of different viewpoints. With the anti-Ken Wright people kind of happy that a rich guy, or at least on the face of it, is coming into the club and pumping his money in. And perhaps... you know, pro-Ken Wright people, I guess that's more my camp, slightly, you know, excited, but slightly nervous as well.
Okay, let's move on to Martinez now. You guys can jump in as and when. Does Martinez deserve to be in charge of Everton next season? And is he a myth, or is he the real deal?
Is this to me first? Okay, I'll get my point in, and then I'll bear what the boys are going to say. So I think this is a really interesting question that... if you ask to someone outside of Merseyside, I actually was talking about it with a Palace fan who lives down in London earlier in the week, and they said, "Sack Martinez, you know, what are you talking about? You go to Merseyside, and the question is very much on the table. You know, it's a case, I think, again, of where your priorities lie. I think Martinez is a great guy. He understands the Everton way. You know, bear with me here. He has an honourability and a sort of pride of what it means to be an Everton manager. And I love that. Like, I love the fact that
he
represents us and he gets us. He has a philosophy of football, which I also like. I can connect with that. What he has to do for next season, he will be manager next season, I'm sure, is improve the defence. Improve what he is not very good at as a coach. As a manager, improve what the team have been dreadful at this year. I do think he deserves another season based on the fact, you know, we've scored, I think, the second most amount of goals this season. We've shown a lot of style, a lot of what people didn't like from the Moyes era, that we were negative and we were pretty dry in a football sense. So give him another season, but he has to do something different at the back.
Stephen, there are 7 defeats at home. There have been 2 goals up or more 6 times and got a draw at best in all of those games. But they've got Romelu Lukaku, who's got 18 league goals and they're 12th.
Style over substance there.
To a red. Question to a red. That's
style
not fair.
Style over substance.
Does he deserve the chance to kind of... Because that if I they do manage to keep hold of that crop of young players...
I hope he stays.
Well, I'm sure you do, yeah. But if he gets to keep that crop of young players... Do you, you're not an Everton fan, clearly, but do you think he should be trusted that he can get it right next season? Because if he keeps Lukaku, Barkley, Stones, those gems there, that will be his last chance to deliver.
He's never proved he can get a defence together anywhere he's been. If you were anyone that follows the club that he's in charge of, that's got to be your worry. He never got it right at Wigan, and you kind of give him the benefit of the doubt. It was Wigan, like, you know, he didn't have the resources. He's now talking about he's got the best British centre-back of the last 25 years under his charge.
No way.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I wouldn't agree with that.
I'm not
sure,
but I'm just talking about the way Martinez talks his players up. So if he's going to say he's got Seamus Coleman, who is a very good right-back, he's got a quality centre-back, and he's got a couple of decent left-backs, well, you've got all the components there then to have a solid defence, yet he still doesn't have a solid defence. I agree with Josh. He's probably got to get another season. He's constructed a lot of that squad. He's brought a lot of them younger players on. I think he deserves the chance to see can he push them on to the next step. My concern would be if Machinery doesn't put his money where his mouth is. If they lose Lukaku, if they lose Barkley, if they lose Stones, where does that leave them? Where are they getting the next? I think you look at it, and a lot of players. I think Everton have kind of got to, at the moment, bring those players through. Because they're not going to sign the equivalent of a John Stones.
Well, they're just not out there, are they? Like,
But I'm saying, if when the big name is on the market, you know, a good young attacking midfielder from Barcelona, he's not moved. Although De La Feo did prove me kind of wrong, but you know, on the whole, they are going to move to City, United, Liverpool, Arsenal. They're going to move to Bayern Munich, wherever it is. Everton are not quite in that bracket yet. Maybe the money makes that happen. So when you've actually got them. Gems currently actually in your squad, they've got to do everything to keep them in the...
They do. I agree with your point earlier and what you're saying there. The biggest task of the chairman of Martinez over the summer is probably keeping that squad there. And, you know, I think it's unavoidable what you're saying about his experience of not really being able to coach or manage a defence, that the stats don't lie on that. I think it's fascinating from a football perspective because, you know, you said a lot of the personnel are still there from the Moyes era. So the defence is the same, injuries, few new people, fair enough, but the defence is mainly the same. What Martinez is clearly doing is coaching them differently in training, and probably to coach them, he's coaching them more offensively.
But it's the same as kind of what happened with Arsenal in a way. In Wenger took over a great Arsenal defence, and they were the basis for the great Arsenal teams that won everything. As soon as Wenger had to construct his own back four,
he struggled.
Yeah. He hasn't been able to do
it. Let me bring in Akin here now. I'll ask you, then you can make your point. They mentioned the guys there about, Steve mentioned about him bringing on certain players in the 2 years that he's been there now at Everton. Aaron Lennon's an example of someone that he's brought on. Is he someone that could be an outside chance for the European squad? And would that be down to Martinez?
For the Euros?
Yeah.
You look surprised.
In the room.
You look surprised, but if you look at the wingers, who's a dead cert,
you know what?
Bar Sterling at the moment?
To be honest, international football... To me, it's almost like another
Flano
sport.
Lets him out of his pocket, George. I'm not sure.
International football is almost like another sport. England, almost terrible. Aaron Lennon, no, come on. He's been in good form for like six games. Let's all calm down. That's almost the same. Well, it's not almost the same, but people were talking about Marcus Rashford being in the talk, in discussions for the squad in summer. No, let's just behave ourselves a bit, you know. Aaron Lennon's played well for half this season, I would say. And it's good for him because I think he was harshly done by at Spurs. I didn't think he did too much wrong. Maybe he didn't kick on enough, but I think he was just kind of frozen out unfairly. He's not doing anything different to what he was doing before, in my opinion. It's just that he's getting games. So, but he shouldn't be anywhere near.
So that's a no for him squad. Then.
Yeah.
Martinez, are you having him?
He's a weird one for me because I think much in the same way young players need the time to develop, I think young managers, we need to give them more time to develop. For me, he's got potential to be a good manager, a very good manager. He's already got a trophy under his belt. A lot of managers don't have that. But then on the other hand, he's taken a team down. His teams have conceded 70-plus league goals in a season. So, you know, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other with him. Having said that, I think he's got the potential to be a very good manager. I just think he needs to... I think maybe with some guys, they want to control too much. If you know you can't coach teams to defend well, get a defensive coach to handle that side of things. I don't know if it's that simple.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, that's what I want to say.
I don't know if it's that simple or, you know, that straightforward. But, you know, hire the guy. You're a manager at a Premier League football club, which means you're running... You are the figurehead of £1 million company in a £1 billion industry. Go and hire, headhunt who you need
to.
Yeah,
the same in rugby or you need to, whatever else.
You know, in order to make your thing work.
But then you've got to listen to him as well. You know, going back to Arsenal.
Yeah, Wenger doesn't listen to Steve.
He just clearly doesn't listen to
He doesn't listen to Steve Bold. But who's to say Steve Bold was any good? He was a good defender, but we don't know if he was a defensive coach.
Yeah.
But in any case, from the point of view of Martinez, to me it seems like he might want to control too much. You don't need to do everything, you know, because you mentioned some great points. 18-goal striker up front. You've got one of the potentially best centre-backs in the country. Not ever seen, not in the past 25 years.
But I mean, we're saying that after the season Everton having at the back. It is weird, isn't it? Like,
it's true, actually. He's getting the most praise off the back of the worst defensive
displays. It's mad.
It's quite ironic.
I've said that to you numerous times. I'm not massively sold on him.
It's like praising a striker for being great who hasn't scored for 20 games.
Yeah, because he's done a couple of Cruyff turns.
No, it's not the same.
Well, it kind of is. I know it's a defence is a unit,
yeah,
but if you're going to say that this is the next big bright prospect for England,
he's a very good defender. Watching him more recently, after it being brought to my attention, that is he that great? I'm not, again, like Stephen, I'm not 100% sold. All the comparisons of Rio Ferdinand, please do not disrespect Rio Ferdinand, the greatest centre-back the Premier League has seen, the greatest English centre-back in the past, since I've been watching football, in the past 25, 30 years or whatever. So, he's nowhere near that level.
You mustn't have watched many Liverpool games. Carragher was playing.
Wow. Jamie Carragher.
Stick on point.
Don't
fall for it. Don't get sucked.
But in terms of going back to Martinez, I do understand what Everton fans, and I read a lot of mailboxes online, and Everton fans are not very happy with him. Some aren't, and I do get it, because this season the standard has been poor across the board. The only two sides, I would say, that look like seasoned, proper teams are Leicester and Tottenham. The rest of
West
the
Ham.
League...
No,
they've been inconsistent.
They're inconsistent, yeah. Are they?
When they look good, they look good, but they've been inconsistent. But in terms of proper teams that look like champions, Leicester and Tottenham are the only ones. Imagine that, Leicester City. And Tottenham have been the only ones that look like proper teams. And Everton should be at least in the top six. They should be in the mix. There's no way they should be 12th.
Yeah.
So I get where their fans are coming from. This is a very good opportunity for teams like Everton to get top
I agree
four.
With that. That's the hardest thing to take this season.
And next year you won't get a better.
No one will get a better opportunity.
But that's
another
thing that Martinez teams miss is a bit of steel, ain't it?
Yeah.
Like when they were 2-0, I know they were down to 10 men. But you know, you can't throw away.
God, 2-0. Yeah.
Even with 10, whatever it takes in the last couple of minutes, just don't.
You don't lose it.
That, but yeah, you just don't. Whereas Martinez teams kind of are prepared to play, no matter they're what naive. The situation. Yeah,
they are naive, and I think he's naive. It's back to my point. Sorry, but it's back to my point in terms of he seems like a young manager that needs time to develop. He goes around saying, "I've got the best young player in the world or Europe or whatever," talking about Ross Barkley. He goes around saying, "I've got the best English centre back since sliced bread and Bobby Moore or whatever," talking about John Stones. So I feel that he needs to get a bit more cute with what he says, with how he coaches, with how he manages. He seems very naive to me. Mm-hmm. And again, much in the same way as young players do dumb things on the pitch because they lack that experience, to me, he lacks that managerial experience. He should have it by now, but
he's around a while.
He's been green. Around a while. He should have it, and he's been through a couple of leagues as well, so he should have it by now, but he just displays those kind of things.
I tell you what I think is hurting him as well, media-wise, because he has started to take a bit of flack in the media, and the general football public has kind of lost patience with him, I think to do with his moaning.
I was just going to ask you, I've got here, just promise you, is it annoying you now that after every game, especially defeats, he's blaming referees, he's blaming everything apart from his tactics and his ability to manage and navigate wins.
Just talking to someone like who's, you know, Josh will know better, he watches it more Everton than me, but I just, you know, he has a very, he's very one-eyed, as in anything that goes against Everton, and they've had bad decisions, so the League Cup semi-final, he was able to pick up, you know, that ball had gone out and he was raging about it. It was a terrible decision and referees, officials have been screwing them over all season. But the week before, he was quite happy that Stones
took out Sterling
over in the box, and that was kind of like, oh, that was
that was hypocritical, yeah.
But I think he's, as a kind of a neutral perspective to Everton, he's had quite a lot of that this season.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I find his press conferences quite tedious, irritating. His interviews, like Jordan's saying, it's always someone else's fault. Referees have done them over. He had injuries. Something happened that was completely out of his control.
Yeah,
I just feel there's been a sense, even in the media, you watch, you know, Match of the Day, people are talking about his press conference, and that kind of just builds up negativity around him and Everton.
And is he suffering because of that? Because the whole reason why I think he didn't get the flack into this season is because everyone loved Martinez. He speaks really well, always smiling,
always punditive,
always positive.
Well, he's quite eloquent.
Yeah, now he's always ultra positive about his players. All his players are the best players.
It's unrealistic
the world's ever
positivity.
Seen,
but now, as Stephen says, the media slightly and neutrals now starting to turn and like, hang on a minute.
I agree with what Steve is saying. I think recent interviews haven't played out well for him. To me, he doesn't do a lot different to any other Premier League manager who defends their team and players. I think I don't know about naivety. I think it's a lack of flexibility for Martinez. If you rewind to last season, We were even more incapable of actually just punting it long when we needed to.
He's got a football philosophy and they stick to it no matter what.
Is he the new Wenger?
I think he's got a lot of similarities which worries the hell out of me, I've got to be honest.
But, it should.
You know, when you're talking about defensive coach, I mean, you get Steve Bolden.
20 years of this.
Yeah, there are a lot of similarities. I think you have to see both sides of the coin. The fact is, you need a philosophy as a modern manager. You need an identity as a team, like Pochettino has. You know, Martinez understands that and sticks by it, and I like that. He just needs a bit more, a bigger dose of pragmatism.
All right, last point, very briefly, I'm going to ask you, not the two guys here, who's got the best team on Merseyside?
Oh. Everton.
Okay.
That Liverpool team is...
Well, we'll see Thursday.
Being United proves nothing at the moment. It proves nothing.
All right, let's move on from Everton. Getting to our last
league
topic
table
of the
don't
pod.
Lie, George. That's all I'm saying.
Where are you guys?
Seventh with a game in hand, but we're definitely well ahead of Everton.
Oh, sorry.
I don't want to get lost in Merseyside mediocrity, right? Like, both teams need to step up, and we both belong higher at the table.
All right, and last topic of the pod, guys. I want to talk a little bit about injuries. and players getting is, we touched on it about a month or so ago, but I want to kind of develop as to why we feel more and more players are getting more and more injuries. And I was saying to you guys just before we started recording that it used to be just Arsenal that had the heavy and lengthy injury list for long parts of the season. But I think pretty much every team, maybe bar Spurs, West Ham, have had long lists of key players out for long periods. So it's not just us anymore. Something is clearly changing in the dynamics in the waters of Premier League football. We'll start with you, Stephen. Why do you feel so many players now, so many more players now, are picking up injuries?
Could be a whole host of reasons. I mean, there's a lot of games played these days that are high intensity, high pressure environments. I'd imagine that leads a small bit to it. And then I guess not, you know, altering coaching patterns and training regimes to allow for those games. You know, is it Verheyen, the Dutch coach that was with Wales? I mean, he called Klopp out, just talking about Liverpool, because we've had a lot of injuries this season. He called Klopp out 2-3 weeks before we had that big glut of hamstring injuries at Christmas. He said, this is going to happen. So there must be, he must have had some insight, without me having any insight into it, as to coaching methods, coaching regimes, what Klopp brings to the table with his players, that he felt was going to lead to multiple injuries. Mm. So I think, you know, there's a bit of that. I think the pitches these days are very firm, they're very solid, so impact injuries and that kind of thing, I think, is probably more prevalent in the modern game than it used to be. So yeah, just a general, I think there's a wide variety of reasons why there's probably
more and more
multiple injuries occurring these days.
Okay, Akin, we've got like Wiltshire, Sturridge, Kompany, Jones, Carroll, Dembele here. Are some players just injury prone, i.e. no matter what they do, they're always going to pick up the same injuries, or is it more than that?
Some players just are injury prone. Going back, there's Darren Anderton, Jamie Redknapp. Some players just are injury prone. Some people's bodies just don't hold up to the same kind of pressures as other people's bodies. That's just the beauty of humanity. But in terms of why there are so many injuries, I've got some theories that I've looked quite deeply into. Stephen touched on one of them, the pitches. The pitches are far too hard. They're far too firm. You're not supposed, the human body is not made to run on concrete surfaces. The bones and the joint structure need a more soft surface to run. Yeah, to run on. So when these players, these football pitches are more or less like concrete surfaces, because they're trying to get the pitches so smooth. They're not even grass anymore. It's a mixture of grass and synthetic and all these types of things. In terms of what they're training on, they're probably training on 3G pitches a lot of the times, which are made up of all sorts of things. So these surfaces are much too firm for joints, for muscles, and so on and so forth. So these things, over time, wear and tear takes place.
And then also,
so it might not
leave very firm pitches with very greasy surfaces. So you've actually
you have less control. But in any case, over time, you're going to get muscular injuries. They're going to be strained and so on and so forth. That's why you're getting strains, hamstring strains. Hamstrings are a very complex muscle already, and it takes a lot of punishment when somebody's sprinting at pace as well. On a hard surface, it's terrible for the body. The knees as well. We're getting all these cruciate ligaments. We had them at the beginning of the season. The pitches are far too firm. On top of that, you combine that with the football boots. They concentrate so much on patterns and stupid colours, but they do not protect. Somebody can kick someone on the toe, metatarsal, they're gone for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is. Calf strains and so on, back to the pitches. You might have issues with your shins and all that kind of, they don't wear shin pads anymore, or they're just a bit of paper at the front of the, you know, the socks. So there's no protection. You're playing on different surfaces. All these things, you're going to get more injuries. On top of that, the way they are training more kind of, it's more strength training involved with football. Footballers are a lot fitter. That comes with its problems as well. The pace of the game is getting better. Players can last for longer, but they have more muscular density, which means those muscles need more kind of maintenance. You look at heavyweight boxers or most boxers, they don't carry that much muscle. Anthony Joshua carries some muscle, but if you saw in the one match that he was taking the distance, he started gassing. The more muscle you have, the more lactic acid, the tireder you get over longer periods of time. When you are tired, when you have lactic acid and those type of toxins in your muscles, in your bloodstream, you open yourself up to more injuries because the muscles are weaker over that time. So the type of training needs to be looked at as well. All this strength training, players looking like bodybuilders. You're a footballer. Your body is supposed to be made for football.
A lot of people said that about Leicester, actually. Leicester are the leanest, slimmest looking team. They look very different.
Bar Wazaleski, or whatever his name is.
Wazaleski, yeah. No, a lot of pundits have commented on Leicester actually are very
physically
lean.
Look like
very, they look very different. You know, when you look at Mahrez, when you look at Vardy, they're strong, they're fit, but they're not like Ronaldo. So there is an element, I'd imagine.
And then on top of that, I don't think there's anything to do with the amount of games.
And they've had no injuries.
They used to play more games. There was the English league was 24 teams, the top flight, and then it went down to 22. So they've always played more games historically. I mean, over the Christmas period, they played Boxing Day, they played New Year's Day. You know, now everybody's moaning it's too many games, too many games. I don't think that's to do with it. I think it's the other side. Other things, we've got all these advantages in terms of technology and sports science, but football is so far behind in everything. And sports science is one of the issues, or one of the areas they're so far behind in. They need to look at NFL, the American sports, and how they do things. NFL is probably the most brutal sport of all of them, and you don't have players out for that
two, three, four months.
Of course players get injuries, but you look at how physical that sport is, but they still maintain, they still manage to play.
But I think my point with the games is not so much the games, is what the coaches are doing in between the games.
So training.
If at Christmas you're playing Boxing Day and on the Wednesday, I don't know, Saturday, Tuesday, what are the management doing in between? Because I have a feeling a lot of these managers are training. And the players are basically, they're getting no recovery.
They're not recovering.
To look after them. And that's leading to the...
Josh, what do you think about why there's so many more now players that are just out for long periods of time? Do you have any theories as to why that's happening?
Yeah. Firstly, I think it's beautiful how we discuss these things, and ultimately we'll never bloody know, will we? Because it's just so closed, you know, behind these football doors or whatever.
Arsenal was really forthcoming with their injury crisis.
Yes.
You can't really hide it, can you? It's difficult to hide at Arsenal.
No, but they're not. They say six weeks and then a
year
later.
Yeah. I don't think they know. I don't think they know what's happening. I think another theory you could put out there, someone was discussing with me in the week, this idea that the players are sort of... hypersensitive to injuries and will not play unless they're 100%.
The Dutch theory.
And I think for a lot of players that's probably true. I'm not, you know, mentioning names, but you hear that, and I think there is no doubt that even 10 years ago, certainly 20, 30 years ago, pros just played. They played, and they probably played with a slight tear.
Is that the correct method?
It's the mentality now.
Is that the correct approach in terms of playing through all the pain? Because when they have retired, you look at so many players of yesteryear who were not looked after.
They've had hip operations, double hip operations.
Exactly. So, in fairness to the players, if they are like that, which I don't think they are, I think there are some, but I don't subscribe to that. But if they are, are they within their right? Because they've got to think about the rest of their life.
I think that's a fair challenge. And what it probably means is that fans actually have to just have a bit of compromise and know that, you know, certain players you can't push too quickly. Like, you know, certainly in Arsenal's case, you got to give people time. So, yeah, I agree with that. It's probably just about finding the balance with players.
No, but I think Josh makes a good point. I think there are players that definitely...
Yeah, there will be some.
Gerrard tells a story about Daniel Sturridge before a United game, actually, where
the physios said,
and the doctors, he is okay to play. There is no risk to him. But Sturridge was adamant he wasn't fit to play. Gerrard had to basically cajole him into playing. He scored the winner. So, you know, it clearly that was a mindset that he didn't feel 100%, despite doctors and physios saying there was no risk to him to play.
Do you think that managers, football managers now going forward now, if this is the going to be the norm in terms of big key players being out injured for long periods, Aguero at City and company, Sturridge at your club, do managers now have to start thinking about, right, the top six clubs, if we're going for the league, I might need another Aguero now. I might need another Daniel Sturridge. I might need another Phil Jones, because if I'm only getting, I don't know, 12 to 15, 90 minutes out of these players a season, Aguero's probably good enough in that he can miss half season and still score 30 goals, as he's proven, but he's a bit of a freak. Do managers need to now start doubling their squads almost to kind of compensate for key players being out during the season?
They won't be able to with the Premier League rules. They're restricted to what? To squad, what's it, 25?
Yeah, but that's enough. That's two for
I know, but what I'm saying is you're not going to be able to have two Vincent Companies unless you're playing them both every week. Vincent Company 2 is not going to sit on the bench and go, I don't mind sitting around waiting for Vincent Company 1 to get injured. I just think you've got to manage those guys a little better. I mean, Arsenal, I'm going back to Arsenal again. I mean, you had Alexis Sanchez earlier in the season where Wenger acknowledged, going back to the sports science point you were making, Akin, they checked his stats and he was in the red zone, or the so-called red zone. Yet he played him anyway and he got injured.
I think Sanchez is a really good example, because a lot of people forget that we bought Sanchez off the back of a World Cup.
He played two or three summers in a row.
In a row, World Cup, fourth Premier League season, a new country and a new league's intense. Off the back of that season, I think he played the Copa America. Won that. He went distance in that, straight back, 3 weeks, had a minimal pre-season. Well,
and there was videos of him running and training on the beach that he was posting himself.
And he was supposed to have a break for 6 weeks when the season started, but we were doing so poorly against West Ham, we had to bring him on.
But then that's your fault. That's Arsenal's
fault.
Yeah,
of course.
In terms of
management.
Again, that's what Steven's saying. I remember 15, 16 years ago in United... So Alex Ferguson, he gave Peter Schmeichel a 3 week holiday. He said, I don't want to hear of you training or anything.
Just go and chill.
Go on holiday. Results do not matter. And, you know, because I think Peter Schmeichel was going through a bit of poor form. Sent him away, came back, won us the title, of course. Ooh. So this is Ferguson using common sense. Common sense mixed with sports science can go a long way. Mm. One without the other, you're not going to do so well. And I think that's what's happening here. Now, just before you interrupt me, football, again, I keep going on, £1 billion industry.
That was my question. Is it quite embarrassing? There's so much money.
It's very embarrassing. Because if I'm a manager at a football club or whatever, I'm in the leadership team of a football club or the football organisation, we should put, because it's a business. Your main assets need to be looked after. I don't want one physio at a club or one club doctor. There will be a doctor... That's the managing the team of doctors.
A department.
But each player has their own personal trainer, their own nutritionist, their own cook, everything, dentist, because people don't understand that even your dental health has an effect on your physical health, because nerve endings and your central nervous system go through your teeth. So having a wisdom tooth taken out can have an effect on how you're running. So all of these things, each player should have their own team.
But that is ultimately, that's a good point. But ultimately, I mean, Chelsea actually is a perfect example of where it's all gone wrong. You're talking about, is it embarrassing for a multi-billion pound industry? Managers have so much power in clubs. Arsene Wenger, the reason he brought Alexis Sanchez back is he's struggling for results. Mm-hmm. Crowd's getting on his back. So he panics and he brings someone back despite the sports science telling him
he's not ready.
Of course, Chelsea, the club manager will have the overarching say. But it's for them to be responsible enough to take into consideration what the science is saying. If the science is saying he needs a rest, but I need results, it's up to the manager to decide what he does.
But that's where the player's welfare gets taken out of the equation, because the manager will always which is ongoing and all the rest of it, so we won't talk about that. But there was a whole issue over he was angry that she went onto a football pitch to look after a player who was down injured. Now she is a doctor. Her primary care is
it's a vocation,
to the individual,
it's not a job, it's a vocation,
Chelsea football club. Whereas Mourinho was looking at it as this is a football
issue. I need results. Issue. I need him on the pitch. Yeah.
But you're getting in the way of me.
Wasn't Mourinho? Mourinho has been vilified because of his behaviour that day. So everybody's acknowledged he was in the wrong. He probably knows he was in the wrong. He won't admit it, but he knows he was in the wrong because at that time, the doctor does take precedence in terms of the player's gone down injured. Well, that wasn't a head injury, but the player's gone down injured and the game was stopped for that. She was well within her right to go. No, the doctor was. So he was actually, he's been seen as the guy in the wrong. That's been acknowledged. But in terms of going back to what you were saying about Wenger with the Alexis Sanchez thing, you are making a good point that most managers will they will have the overarching say anyway, and they will say the results take precedence
over health,
over this individual's calf strain or whatever it may be. However, at least they have the knowledge to know what's going on instead of looking at it blindly. They can then make those decisions whether they want to take the right decision or not.
Yeah, no, that's
we cannot, you know. Mm.
I mean, I think it all leads into even fans. Like, as the Liverpool, I was as frustrated as anyone with Daniel Sturridge.
Because
you're just like, Christ, we're playing him 140 grand a week, and we're not seeing him out on the football pitch.
He's not working.
So you're almost kind of like, I want to see him play regardless of what's. It almost, do you know what I mean?
Just get him out there, yeah.
As a fan, but I'm assuming doctors and people behind the scenes. Jurgen Klopp's not a doctor, but yet he was questioning whether he.
How injured he should be out playing.
I'm assuming doctors are checking him over and saying no, he's not ready to come back, and whatever it is, it's a multi-billion pound industry, but that's part of the problem. As in, multi-billion pound, millions of pounds,
they need results.
Yeah, it's a results industry also.
That's
something amazing about that, isn't it? Well, I think for all the money in the game, and for all the money that will be pumped into science as we go on to try and sort of solve this ridiculous situation, we these are human beings, and to a certain extent, you've just got to have the right attitude and have the right kind of approach as a football club. I just think it's a sort of wonderful irony to the mega machine of the Premier League and
so financially advanced yet so far behind in terms of
dodgy hamstring. It's just like,
and you're done. Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you very much for your contributions on this week's FFP. Josh, thank you very much for coming
down
here first. You got through it. How was it?
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I went okay considering how it went on the weekend for Everton as well.
This is true. So, I didn't really mention the result too much, but
exactly.
You just did, so. well done. It's good to have an Everton voice on the pod. Thank you very much, Stephen and Akin, for coming on. Don't forget to subscribe for free via the iTunes library, Football Fans Podcast, and Twitter, FFP_11. Until next week, peace.